Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. This is going to be an empowering hour. You're going to learn about green tea enhancing cognitive functions of your brain, how leptins can reverse uncontrolled diabetes type 1 and 2, how honeysuckle tea can fight the flu, how heavy metal poisoning can be combated by probiotics protecting you and your children, how Alzheimer's disease is linked to the pineal gland's calcification from fluoride, and much more. We're also going to deal with public health issues today, including how the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is fueling corporatization of American health care. Dr. Philip Kaper, a physician, is sharing this insight, and we'll focus on that. But I'm going to have Jesse Ventura on the phone today because I want to talk about the Keystone Pipeline. I want to talk about Obamacare. I want to talk about the fixed fortunes. The biggest corporate political interests spend billions of dollars. Why? Because they get trillions in return. I also am going to ask him about the 3 billion gallons of highly toxic fracking waste dumped into California drinking water supply, and no one's held accountable. A commentary from Ralph Nader on Big Pharma. Crony capitalism is out of control. I also want to talk about 5 toxic chemicals in the products we use every day that we could identify and get rid of, and also how they have a new system to make sure that every kid in America from age 0 to 20 is now going to be given a psychiatric evaluation, and you can bet the vast majority are going to find they're on drugs afterwards. That's all Big Pharma. Also, we just can confirm it, the hottest year in history. So the question is, how, if we've just had the hottest year in history, do we also have some of the coldest days in history? It's all due to global warming and climate change. Also today, based upon a question last evening when I was taking a late evening break, as I generally do, to have a glass of juice at the local health food store, and a person who's a professor at Columbia, a lot of the people up in that area shop there, have juices at night, said, what do you think about this whole drive to make people feel that if they don't vote, they're unpatriotic? I said, let's discuss patriotism. Yeah, why don't you do a commentary on it? Well, today, a commentary, the virtues and sins of patriotism. We have a lot to share. Let's begin. I'm willing to guess that just about every person listening has at some point or does today have varying degrees of heavy metals in your body. Lead, mercury, aluminum. Because aluminum is one of the most common minerals found, and it's in all the soil, and lots of it. The key is to have as little as possible in your body, and even when you're growing something organic, you're still going to have in the soil some minerals that you don't want in your body, but they're in tiny amounts, and if you have green juices, you can chelate them out. Vitamin C chelates them out. But most Americans are not looking at how they can chelate out heavy metals, like with wheatgrass juice. They just go about eating and drinking the things that they think are fine for them, and they never notice that the migraine headaches, the lack of attention, the lack of the ability to sleep, hormone imbalance, all can come from heavy metals. Here's the latest of what we can do in a good way. This is from the Canadian Center for Human microbiome, and probiotics. And they found that the lactobacillus bacteria, the good probiotics, could protect children and pregnant women from heavy metals. So this team wanted to see what would happen if you give a particular type of probiotic strain. Would it do anything with heavy metals? And the answer was, yes, it does. So here's the takeaway message. Quote, a significant protective effect against mercury and arsenic was measured in the pregnant women. According to Dr. Gregory Greed, quote, that reduction in these compounds, meaning heavy metals, in mothers could presumably decrease negative developmental effects in their fetus and newborns. And so that's important. So the takeaway message is this. Get your probiotics each day. I know many of you are getting it every day because you're getting it in your greens and your reds. Lots of it. Billions. And you need billions. And also there are a lot of people right now promoting the notion that only probiotics that are coming from New Zealand and Australia are really good. It's nonsense. I actually challenged one of the people on this recently and found that they had no real knowledge of biochemistry and certainly no knowledge of the chemistry in our digestive tract. They were just trying to sell products. What you need is you need between 1 to 10 billion probiotics per day. Now, if you suffer from itises, ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, diverticulitis, you could double that, because the healthier the bacteria in your intestines, the healthier you are. Honeysuckle tea. Now, I don't know many people that ever tried honeysuckle tea. I like honeysuckle. I grow honeysuckle, especially when you get the little tiny yellow trumpets. And you just put it between your teeth and you pull it. And as you pull the honeysuckle out, it leaves behind its very sweet residue. That wonderful aroma also. But who knew how good it was? Well, it turns out that scientists at Nanjing University in China found that it's been used for over 2,000 years. They published a really good article in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Research, and they say it fights the flu. Not only fights the targets the influenza A viruses, but does so at a terrific level. And then when you look at the history of honeysuckle in China, it's been used to treat flu and viral infections for thousands of years. And they say this study identifies the particular element within honeysuckle. So, quote, since Fleming discovered penicillin nearly a century ago, antibiotics have been developed to target various bacterial infections and have saved the lives of millions of people. Unfortunately, no natural product that is effective against viral infections has been identified so far. Really? Well, boy, are they wrong there. How about looking at garlic and onion? Both natural and both good against that. How about raw honey? Really broad spectrum natural antibiotic and against viruses. It does both, and it's natural with no side effects. But in any case, in this particular article, they found that by using honeysuckle tea, which you can get in a health food store, you can fight the flu. So add that on to the echinacea tea and the astragalus tea. And that way, along with wild oregano oil, now that's a superstar for viruses and colds. In fact, at the first sign of any cold or virus, when you start getting a little congested, you start having a little wheezing, maybe a little non-productive dry cough, this is before it gets really phlegmy, that's when the body is mounting its fight. That's when your temperature can start to go up. You may even have a little diarrhea. You're certainly going to have some expulsion of mucus out of the nose, because that's how the body tries to eliminate any kind of antigen in the body, through mucus. That's when you strike. Now, if you want the best way, and it's not easily tolerable, what you do, you get some pure wheatgrass juice, however much you can handle. And generally, that's 2 to 4 or 5 ounces. You dilute that, and you put 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar in there. And dilute it with about 16 ounces of green apple juice. Then you put in 10 drops of wild oregano oil and 1/4 teaspoon of bee propolis and some vitamin C. Now, if you're really courageous, you'll juice the garlic of an entire bulb, not a clove. You could have anywhere from 4 to 7 or 8 cloves to a bulb, but the whole bulb. And then you drink that down. And then you feel like you're having a near-death experience. And as you're laying there thinking, why in the hell did I listen to Gary? My head's spinning. The body is doing a massive adjustment and killing off those bacteria and viruses. So when you get a good night's sleep and you wake up the next day, your body should be back in homeostasis or balance. Next up is leptin, L-E-P-T-I-N, and it's really good. The appetite-regulating hormone leptin can actually be able to reverse high blood sugar in either type 1 or type 2 diabetes. That's according to Yale University and Howard Hughes Medical Institute, published in Nature Medicine. Now, why? How's it work? What they found is leptin blocks the blood sugar pathway, and that's important. That maintains you don't get those big spikes. So, easy to get, non-toxic. Quote, these new data provide an additional mechanism by which leptin therapy reverses hepatic insulin resistance and hyperglycemia in animal models of poorly controlled type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So, that's good. And something that can help all the diabetics out there. Something else can help our brain, green tea. This is a brand new study, and it's from the Psychiatric University Clinics, and here's what it says, quote, researchers reported the first evidence a green tea extract enhances the cognitive functions and boosts human brain power, in particular working memory. The new study by a team of researchers led by Dr. Christopher Beglinger, University Hospital at Basel, and others found that the green tea extract increases the brain's effective connectivity, meaning the causal influence that one brain area exerts upon another. So that improves cognitive function. So what's one of the things that's missing when you start having dementia, memory loss? Cognitive function. So green tea twice a day, I'm going to suggest 1,000 milligram, would make a big difference. Quote, our findings suggest that green tea might increase the short-term synaptic relativity of the brain, meaning how nerve impulses are transmitted. Let me tell you why this is so important. Because we're finding that more people are losing their memory, short-term memory, than ever before in American history. Of all the people who want help, one of the biggest, especially in women, is short-term memory loss. And now we can know why. In fact, I'm doing a paper right now that I'll have done within the week and published, a new one, on the stresses that women go through at different stages of their life, more so now than ever before, that cause the brain to become inflamed and the hippocampus area specifically adversely affected and short-term memory. And the frustration is when you're speaking with someone, they won't remember you had a particular conversation. It simply isn't there. So then they feel that, you know, well, that's not right. I didn't say that. I didn't do that. Yeah, you did. But they don't have the memory. And it's just one step from there to dementia. And it's a short step. It could take 2 to 3 to 4 years. And I'm seeing it at epidemic levels. And once you get into dementia, then it takes a whole different protocol. So if you could take some green tea twice a day, and there are a lot of other things you could do, but that's something that's relatively easy. I learn that when I give 20 different items, people might pick up and remember one or two. So best just to give one thing at a time. So today it's green tea twice a day for maintaining memory. And finally, there's new research that shows that Alzheimer's disease is linked in part to the pineal gland calcification from fluoride, the very fluoride we've been writing about and talking against for so long. We know that Alzheimer's is an epidemic and about in the next 10 years to be pandemic in our society. We know that the pharmaceutical company is looking at hundreds of billions of dollars in drugs to use against it, and none of those are effective. Of course, if they use coconut oil, that would do more than any drug currently in existence anywhere, at any time, for any person with Alzheimer's. But that's a different medical model, and they're not going to use that. So what we have to be aware of is, what can we do today? We'll stop drinking tap water that has fluoride in it, because the fluoride ends up causing calcification of the pineal gland, and that contributes to it. So what do we do to get the calcification out of our body? What do we do to rejuvenate our brain? Well, removing calcification from the brain would be very important, because we know definitely now that Alzheimer's patients have highly calcified pineal glands, as do two-thirds of the adult population. And that's why I'm saying that the people who have two-thirds of the population, that's for people over the age of, let's say, 50, you're dealing with over 50 million people, minimum. Quote, fluoride is likely to cause decreased melatonin production and to have other effects on normal pineal function, which in turn could contribute to a variety of effects in humans. That's from the National Research Council. Now, Alzheimer's disease patients are commonly deficient in melatonin, likely due to the inability of their pineal gland to produce adequate melatonin. And remember, the pineal gland is responsible for regulating melatonin and serotonin, which are precursors to N,N-dimethyltryptamine, or DMT. And melatonin is secreted at night when we're sleeping. And so we have to take in vitamin C. That can help. Vitamin E can help, especially the mixed tocopherols. Get rid of pesticides, fungicides, and mercury. Get rid of the mercury fillings in your mouth. Only eat organic, no GMOs, no sugar, caffeine, alcohol. They impede the pineal gland's functioning and add to its calcification. Cortisol and adrenaline, both stress hormones created by the adrenal glands, can interfere with melatonin and serotonin, the sister hormones to DMT, or the pineal elixir that helps us wake up. Drugs like cocaine, heroin, and marijuana cause the pineal gland to falter. Spirulina, chlorella, wheatgrass, that will help decalcify the pineal gland. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Woman and everything you own. Law of average plainly states that chances go around. But if you want to know the truth about it, I tell you what's true to you. Down, yeah, got bad love.
That number's hot. But the book is got you for every cent you got. Walk around in a day.
With us, everyone, I'm Gary Noll, broadcasting to 170 countries and all across the United States, different stations. We welcome all of you. In this segment of our program, we're going to be going in a few moments to St. Paul, Minnesota, to say hello to former Governor Jesse Ventura. We're going to talk about the Keystone Pipeline and why it should be rejected, but a lot more. I'm going to start by playing just a few moments of Pamela Meyer, How to Spot a Liar, and why this is so important today when you look at all the information coming from political officials, from major institutions. We're being lied to. Listen up.
I don't want to alarm anybody in this room, but it's just come to my attention that the person to your right is a liar. Also, the person to your left is a liar. Also, the person sitting in your very seats is a liar. We're all liars. What I'm going to do today is I'm going to show you what the research says about why we're all liars, how you can become a lie spotter, and why you might want to go the extra mile and go from lie spotting to truth seeking, and ultimately to trust building. Now, speaking of trust, ever since I wrote this book, Lie Spotting, no one wants to meet me in person anymore. No, 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 no. They say, it's okay. We'll email you. I can't even get a coffee date at Starbucks. My husband's like, honey, deception. Maybe you could have focused on cooking. How about French cooking? So before we get started, what I'm going to do is I'm going to clarify my goal for you, which is not to teach a game of gotcha. Lie spotters aren't those nitpicky kids, those kids in the back of the room that are shouting, gotcha, gotcha, your eyebrow twitched, you flared your nostril, I watched that TV show, lie to me, I know you're lying. No. Lie spotters are armed with scientific knowledge of how to spot deception. They use it to get to the truth, and they do what mature leaders do every day. They have difficult conversations with difficult people, sometimes during very difficult times. And they start up that path by accepting a core proposition. And that proposition is the following. Lying is a cooperative act. Think about it. A lie has no power whatsoever by its mere utterance. Its power emerges when someone else agrees to believe the lie. So I know it may sound like tough love, but look, if at some point you got lied to, it's because you agreed to get lied to. Truth number one about lying. Lying's a cooperative act. Now, not all lies are harmful. Sometimes we're willing participants in deception for the sake of social dignity, maybe to keep a secret that should be kept secret, secret. We say, nice song. Honey, you don't look fat in that, no. Or we say, favorite of the digerati. You know, I just fished that email out of my spam folder. I'm so sorry. But there are times when we are unwilling participants in deception, and that can have dramatic costs for us. Last year saw $997 billion in corporate fraud alone in the United States. That's an eyelash under $1 trillion. That's 7% of revenues. Deception can cost billions. Think Enron, Madoff, the mortgage crisis, or in the case of double agents and traitors like Robert Hansen or Aldrich Ames. Lies can betray our country. They can compromise our security. They can undermine democracy. They can cause the deaths of those that defend us. Deception is actually serious business. This con man, Henry Oberlander, he was such an effective con man, British authorities say he could have undermined the entire banking system of the Western world. And you can't find this guy on Google. You can't find him anywhere. He was interviewed once, and he said the following. He said, look, I've got one rule. And this was Henry's rule. He said, look, everyone is willing to give you something. They're ready to give you something for whatever it is they're hungry for. And that's the crux of it. If you don't want to be deceived, you have to know what is it that you're hungry for. And we all kind of hate to admit it. You know, we kind of wish we were better husbands, better wives, smarter, more powerful, taller, richer. The list goes on. Lying is an attempt to bridge that gap, to connect our wishes and our fantasies about who we wish we were, how we wish we could be, with what we're really like. And boy, are we willing to fill in those gaps in our lives with lies. On a given day, studies show that you may be lied to anywhere from 10 to 200 times. Now, granted, many of those are white lies. But in another study, it showed that strangers lied three times within the first 10 minutes of meeting each other. Now, when we first hear this data, we recoil. We can't believe how prevalent lying is. We're essentially against lying. But if you look more closely, the plot actually thickens. We lie more to strangers than we lie to coworkers. Extroverts lie more than introverts. Men lie 8 times more about themselves than they do other people. Women lie more to protect other people. If you're in an average married couple, you're going to lie to your spouse in 1 out of every 10 interactions. Now, you may think that's bad. If you're unmarried, that number drops to 3. Lying's complex. It's woven into the fabric of our daily and our business lives. We're deeply ambivalent about the truth. We parse it out on an as-needed basis, sometimes for very, very good reasons, and other times just because we don't understand the gaps in our lives. That's truth number 2 about lying. We're against lying, but we're covertly for it in ways that our society has sanctioned for centuries and centuries and centuries. It's as old as breathing. It's part of our culture. It's part of our history. Think Dante, Shakespeare, the Bible, News of the World. Lying has evolutionary value to us as a species. Researchers have long known that the more intelligent the species, the larger the neocortex, the more likely it is to be deceptive. Now, you might remember Coco. Does anybody here remember Coco the gorilla, who was taught sign language? Coco was taught to communicate via sign language. Here's Coco with her kitten. It's her cute little fluffy pet kitten. Coco once blamed her pet kitten for ripping a sink out of the wall. We're hardwired to become leaders of the pack. It starts really, really early. How early? Well, babies will fake a cry, pause, wait to see who's coming, and then go right back to crying. 1-year-olds learn concealment. 2-year-olds bluff. 5-year-olds lie outright. They manipulate via flattery. 9-year-olds, masters of the cover-up. By the time you enter college, you're going to lie to your mom in 1 out of every 5 interactions. By the time we enter this work world, and we're breadwinners, we enter a world that is just cluttered with spam, fake digital friends, partisan media, ingenious identity thieves, world-class Ponzi schemers, a deception epidemic. In short, what one author called...
Oh, and here's where we want to go with this. It's hard for people to accept that much of what they do is based upon a lie. And when the professor asked me last night about patriotism, and I was telling him why I would never vote for the lesser of two evils, because it wouldn't be honest. I will vote when I find that someone will be diligent and honest in carrying out the mandate of the people they're meant to serve, the public, not special interest groups, no matter how charming they are, no matter what they promise. And his argument was, well, you know, you have a patriotic duty to vote. And then I heard Sean Hannity saying the same thing. Let me just share this insight with you about the virtues and the sins of patriotism and its propensity towards a fundamentalist nationalism. It's been debated in the psychological and political science communities since the defeat of Hitler and the Third Reich. Nazism was founded upon a patriotic rhetoric to preserve German racial, class, language, and cultural distinctions and confined within its national boundaries. The result, as the world knows all too well, was the fueling of a supremacist patriotic hubris that exalted Germany's illusion of preeminence over other European nations, the reemergence of patriotic mythologies framed in a misinformed reinterpretation of America's founders, dominates Fox's media airwaves through its guiding lights such as Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Charles Krauthammer, and others. And of course, we listen to the radio and we hear people such as Mark Levin, and Mr. Savage and Glenn Beck and others. Patriotism is being used as a weapon to empower infantile behavior and dumb down critical thinking. And this raises the question whether patriotism should be viewed as a mental disorder. Patriotism is not confined in nationalism and nationalistic aspirations. Being faithful to the creed of my country, right or wrong, we've heard that. Or when Bill O'Reilly says you're either with us or you're with the enemy. Or insistently focusing one's gaze upon that shining light on the hill. Patriotism is simply blind loyalty to a particular gang, whether it be the Crips and the Bloods in our inner cities, or criminal drug cartel, a religious cult, or those who faithfully turn the dial to their Fox News every evening. The Nazis set the precedent for successful strategies to utilize patriotic mythologies into criminal war machines. In the 19th century, George Bernard Shaw identified patriotism as a form of delusional mental behavior. He said, patriotism is a pernicious, psychopathic form of idiocy. And Alfred Adler charged the patriot as someone committed to the duty of lie for your country. There are excellent observations to explain the two delusional juvenile logic behind the O'Reillys and Hannitys and Limbaughs in America today. In his essay, Wider Patriotism, and during his recent broadcast, O'Reilly pines away at the increasing number of Americans who no longer believe in American exceptionalism and its superiority over other nations. According to the Pew Research Center, 72% of Americans no longer view the United States as a grandiose nation to be emulated by the rest of the world. 44% no longer feel proud to be Americans. In Sean Hannity's delusional universe, rather than considering that just perhaps all of these Americans developed a moral conscience exceeding the neocon pundits at Fox, these people are simply written off as traitors of the left who, quote, hate this country and blame this country for its ills of the world, end quote. For O'Reilly, all the blame for the patriotic decline should be placed at Obama's feet, and the real historians who appreciate the deeper nuances of the past and its repeating cycles, such as Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn. They are all traitors to patriotism and American exceptionalism. And while Bill O'Reilly acknowledges the U.S.'s errors in starting wars and its continued, quote, legacy of racism, this should not detract Americans from upholding patriotic sentiments and loyalties and the nation's bygone ideals of freedom and liberty. Similar to the cesspool of Randian objectivism, O'Reilly's liberties for American patriotism follow a logic that leads to fanatical extremes of surrealistic babble. Bertrand Russell wrote, patriotism is the willingness to kill and be killed for trivial reasons. Therefore, if given their choice, O'Reilly and Hannity would not falter in tripling our military-industrial complex, invading other countries and expanding surveillance and policing of every American. To keep the American patriotism and exceptionalism alive, we should proceed with regime change in every democratic country harboring reservations contrary to the Washington consensus. America would be a far greater force for the good if it continued to be what it has been in its long history of propping up subservient tyrants and dictators throughout the world. SWAT teams would be increased, provide employment for otherwise dysfunctional returning veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, to replace traditional law enforcement. Welfare would be completely eradicated, no more entitlements. Do away with food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, and return slave labor to restore America's manufacturing so we can compete with Bangladesh. Forget a minimum wage. A true American patriot should welcome any type of work, even at $1 an hour. So why shouldn't women and children work for 25 cents an hour at Walmart and McDonald's if it would keep America strong? O'Reilly and Hannity are not simply at war against liberals and the left and certainly progressives, which are different than liberals and the left. Their real enemy is all of humanity. And to make America great once again, our patriotism should be so strong that we should willingly sacrifice maternity leave, 40-hour work weeks, paid vacations, and retirement at 65. There are plenty of drugs available to relieve neurosis, loss of purpose in life, and spiritual emptiness that Fox News pundits wake up to every morning. do away with environmental protections. Who needs them? Who says that we should have safe water and safe air and safe food? Who said that our household products should be free of harm? Who says that? No. If you have real liberties and you want real freedom in O'Reilly's America, it means that every man, woman, and child should fend for themselves. There's no need for safety regulations when we are truly patriotic and have faith in our Republican and Democratic leaders who embrace one ideology, not just Fox's, MSNBC's. They're all corporatized. No matter how they're sanitized, remember, all politicians at that level are selected before they're elected. So let's do away with airbags and seat belts. These restrict momentum during moments of road rage while listening to Limbaugh and Beck's toxic diatribes blaring from the car radio. Let's permit Wall Street to buy out and merge with U.S. Treasury and simply relocate the USDA to Monsanto and the FDA and CDC to Merck and Pfizer. Let's permit the Koch brothers to manage the EPA. O'Reilly and Hannity can assure us that such efforts will stimulate job growth for remaining years as health rates decline to that of Ethiopian refugees. And in the meantime, we should drape ourselves in the red, white, and blue, await the return of Jesus to take us rightfully to the throne in the White House and pretend to be happy. It should therefore not be a surprise that Hannity finds camaraderie, a meeting of minds, with the former National Security Agency assets and other neo-Nazi Holocaust deniers as normal business. So again, is patriotism a mental disorder, and should a campaign to be launched to help O'Reilly and Hannity and others receive the proper psychological attention, the good electromagnetic pollution that's in their brain for being on the set all day? How about giving them therapy such as mainstreaming Thorazine, Valium, not opium, that's a drug, they would immediately resist that, electroconvulsive therapy, 10 sessions a day. Now that'll do it. Actually, according to the Department of Veterans Affairs and Counseling of Vietnam veterans, patriotism is indeed a mental illness. It might surprise the Fox Network and its viewers that the VA's modus operandi for rehabilitating Vietnam veterans was largely founded upon models created by anti-war activists. Psychologically impaired veterans who continue to embrace radical patriotic views, such as those espoused by O'Reilly, are most in need of rehabilitation. And their families who reinforce veterans' patriotic pride become codependents, prolonging veterans' issues associated with psychological war traumas and the loss of meaning in their lives. So, in conclusion, our advice to Bill O'Reilly and Hannity and all the people on the left and the right who are corporatized, get out of the studios. Take a stroll into the rest of America, not in the gated communities, not in the fawning large theaters where you perform. Get yourselves passports and explore some of the world that I've seen. Pay a visit to the large urban slums being created by America's vulture capitalists and commodities traders, your friends, the hedge funds, and the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank and their failed policies, and the State Department and its failed policies, and USAID's and its failed policies. Do what I do. Stare into the eyes of the children scraping for crumbs in Mexico City's largest slum barrio, Neza, Chalco, or in Orange Town, which only 10 years ago has grown from being livable to the second largest slum in the world, courtesy of America's war on terror being waged in that nation. Hannity and O'Reilly and all the rest, they look at this patriotic issue, and they're not looking at it as a patriotic illness, characterized by an extreme disassociation from the remainder of the planet and nature itself and the suffering that their views and their supporters inflict upon those people. That often happens when too much time is spent in makeup studios and staring into a mirror. These are paper men suffering from a kind of patriotism Albert Einstein called an infantile disease and the measles of mankind. And even worse, it is a patriotism that inflames the worst qualities in humankind and has been the consequences for worst crimes committed against humanity. And hence, how would we know the difference, since almost every institution, every paradigm, and every leader finds it necessary to lie to us? So when can we actually see the sociopath, the psychopath, in the halls of power? When was the last time we called out the President of the United States, or the Secretary of Defense, or the 1,000 generals and admirals that cost us $1 million a year each, and we don't need them, and we don't need their wars? Yet when was the last time people demonstrated against closing it down? That's how connected we are to the lies of our current paradigm. I'm Gary Nall. Let's go over and say hello to former Governor Jesse Ventura. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi, Gary. Always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
I want to go to several issues, and I've got a lot of issues to ask you about. And if you could give us, as you always do, short, succinct, and to the point.
Sure. Gary, can I first comment on all that you just talked about right there?
Sure, please do.
I would just like to say my definition of patriotism is holding the government's feet to the fire. I believe that it's an act of patriotism to pay attention and be vigilant, and when you see government misbehaving or you see government doing what you deem wrong, you get out there and you talk and you let people know and you exercise your First Amendment right. That's why I guess I'm not Mr. Popularity, am I?
Well, you and a lot of other people are not considered patriots. You and a lot of other people are considered radical. You're considered no longer to be enfranchised. You are disenfranchised from policymaking, opinion leading, and the forums that allow progressive and humanistic and spiritual views to be laid out. I get your point. I appreciate it. Now to the issues at hand.
Sure.
This president has been trying to get fast-track approval from Congress to pass the big pipeline, the Keystone Pipeline. And this Congress, coming in January, will have the majority in the House and the Senate and will pass it immediately. Why should we be concerned about the Keystone Pipeline's approval and then its implementation?
Well, first of all, we should be concerned because they have us living in a state of fear and terror over this war on terror. Now, building the Keystone Pipeline, won't that be a natural target for terrorists?
Yes.
And I would like to know who's going to provide the security for that pipeline. Will it be the oil companies hiring Blackwater and people like that, mercenaries, to protect it? Or will it fall upon us, the taxpayers of the United States, to provide that security so the oil companies can reap their big profits? Now, moving on from there, why on earth do we need to build this pipeline? British Columbia refused, so now they've turned it south. This pipeline will not benefit the people of the United States one bit in getting us off dependency of foreign oil, because it's all going to be pumped down to the Gulf, put on ships, and sold throughout the world. This is a benefit for the big oil companies and the big oil companies alone. And I view it this way. The United States used to lead the world in things. We should be leading the world in finding alternative energy. We should be leading the world of getting off this archaic oil and move forward into the new century with something else that will replace oil. Building the Keystone Pipeline, to me, is a step backwards. It's a step simply to provide more money for the oil companies to do their business, because why do we need to take oil from the far reaches of Canada and bring it down to the Gulf of Mexico for to load it on ships to send it throughout the world?
Because of the Koch brothers and all the other people that would be benefiting from it.
Oh, I know that, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Okay.
As for the average American citizen, is not going to benefit from this pipeline one bit, and the jobs they say it'll create, oh, there'll be initial jobs building it, but once it's built, it's only going to take about 50 people, so there'll be about 50 new jobs ultimately that will be attached to the Keystone Pipeline when it's all finished and completed. And like I said, I'd like to know what security will be provided to maintain that it isn't sabotaged, that there's not oil leaks that could happen along the way and every other such thing that would be an environmental disaster.
Let's talk for just a moment about the 3 billion gallons of highly toxic fracking waste dumped into California drinking water supply. Quote, this is just one paragraph from Washington Blog. We've warned for years that fracking pollutes our scarce drinking water. As the Emmy Award-winning documentary Gasland demonstrates, fracking is polluting water all over the country. A study published in the journal Groundwater predicts that the highly toxic fluids used in fracking can migrate to aquifers within a few short years. NBC Bay Area News reported last week that 3 billion gallons of highly toxic fracking waste was injected into California aquifers. Quote, in a time when California faces a historic drought, the NBC Bay Area Investigative Unit has uncovered that the state officials allowed oil and gas companies to pump billions of gallons of wastewater into protected aquifers. The state officials allowed oil and gas companies to pump nearly 3 billion gallons of wastewater into underground aquifers that could have been used for drinking water or irrigation. Those aquifers are supposed to be off limits to that kind of activity protected by the EPA. And then it goes on to the excuses that people in California, once again, paid for politicians.
To me, Gary, someone should go to jail over that, but it won't happen. And the other thing people need to understand quickly is this. You don't want to be trading water for oil. As enlightening as it may be to people out there, believe it or not, you can't live without water. You can live without oil. There was a time that there wasn't oil. And the point being, you can't live without water. And if we're willing to trade water for oil, that's unconscionable. Especially in the world today with the population as it is and clean drinking water at a minimum that we need to get more and more and more just to give people water to drink. And yet we're using good, clear drinking water in which to attain oil. Horrible. Just utterly, I don't know how to describe it. It's insane.
Please address this. This is from Bill Allison and Sarah Harkins from Sunlight Foundation. Quote, between 2007 and 2012, 200 Americans, mostly politically active corporations, spent a combined $5.8 billion on federal lobbying and campaign contributions. A year-long analysis by the Sunlight Foundation, suggests, however, that what they gave pales compared to what they received. They received $4.4 trillion in federal business and support. That figure, more than $4.4 trillion, the federal government paid the nation's 50 million Social Security recipients over the same period, is the result of an unprecedented effort to qualify the less examined side of the campaign finance equation. Do political donors get something in return for what they give? So they found that they gave $5.8 billion, they got $4.4 trillion in contracts back. Shouldn't there be a law outlawing all political contributions and all lobbying by any group other than just average Americans?
Well, Gary, it's like this. In the private sector, that's called bribery, and you go to jail for it. In the public sector with the Democrats and Republicans, it's the standard way of doing business. I've been harping on it for 20 years. Stating why do we allow a complete political system based on the concept of bribery when it's illegal in the private sector? If you do it, you go to jail. And yet the congressmen, senators, governors, and the two political parties, it's their lifeblood, is taking bribes. Call it what it is, bribery. Don't call it a campaign contribution. It is what it is. You're bribing them to get them to make favorable rulings for you. If you think you're going to get an audience with a congressman or senator, Democrat or Republican, yeah, you'll get one as long as you bring a big check with you that you can hand to them beforehand.
That's why I did the segment on lying at the beginning. They call it a contribution without attachment. We're calling it lies. Next up, this is from Vivian Lee and James Tracy, and from memory, it is, quote, the state of Connecticut's Office of Child Advocate issued a 114-page report, and in this focusing on the ambiguous profile of Sandy Hook Elementary school shooter Alan Lanza that may become the basis of mental health practice throughout the United States, with contributions from psychiatrists and academicians from education and social work departments. The publication comes just 2 months after the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Department of Education announced $160 million in funding for mental health initiatives in the nation's public schools. Now, mind you, no one knows about this. So, quote, they began a comprehensive collection and review of records related to mental health screening. So here's what they intend to do. Quote, universal screening for behavioral health and developmental impairments of children from birth to age 21. Referral for thorough evaluation and assessment by outside experts for a child, quote, displaying the types of multidisciplinary developmental challenges presented. Quote, access to quality care coordination for children and their families. That means this, that every person in the United States from birth to 21 years of age would be given a psychiatric evaluation. If you met some of the criteria, if you fidget, if you cannot stay focused, if you feel stressed, if you talk back to your parents or any authority figure, that gets you labeled as having a psychiatric disorder, to which then you are mandated to see a psychiatrist and get treatment, which means drug treatments. This is now in play. This is happening. They've already funded it. What do you think about the idea of pathologizing normal behavior by big psychiatry?
Well, I think that it's our pharmaceutical industry's payoff to our government to put us all on pills. It's that simple. I'll give you the example. I have two people very close to me that have seizure disorders. The doctors put them on four different seizure medications, four different ones. None of them worked. None of them. And yet when these people had to go to Colorado and they got medicinal marijuana, the seizures have disappeared through a natural thing, marijuana, a plant that grows out there. And if you're religious, God made it. And so the point being, what you're telling me is simply a result of the pharmaceutical industry wanting to sell us more pills and get us all addicted to more of their pharmaceutical pills by creating and having the government create a system that will eventually lead to them, dispersing more pills and making more money. To me, having been a governor and a mayor and having dealt with education, education is very simple. The most important element in all education is parenting. And any child that has good parenting will do well in school. And it doesn't matter where they go to school. If they have engaged parents who are, you know, pushing that child forward to be exceptional or to do the best they can. So it all comes back to parenting to me.
Final question. What do you see the likely outcome of the current course that we're on in the United States of commodifying and commercializing everything, a national intelligence security state that is reading every email, watching us, and now cataloging anyone who is an activist?
Yeah.
And every single person protesting anything in the United States, whether in person or over the Internet, is now considered an enemy of the state. Your thoughts?
Well, my wife and I do a great deal of reading, and my wife said something to me the other day that I found shocking and yet very much reality. She looked at me, Gary, and she said something very simple. She said, you know, the people of the United States today are behaving identical to the people of Germany in the 30s.
Your wife is right.
And when she said that to me, it took a moment, and I looked at her, and I said, my God, you're right. You're completely right. We need to start looking in the mirror because we are behaving identical to the German people did in the 30s, and we all know what the ultimate result of that was.
It's a wake-up call. As you and I both have discussed before, we are now a police state, and fascism is the order of the day. Oligarchy rules. Even a Yale study by two professors at Yale University said we no longer have a functional democracy. We have an oligarchy. And you can't have fascism unless you have powerful people who control government. That is the nature of fascism.
Oh, yeah.
Oligarchies control us. So one more reason why you and many other who are truly progressive, populist people should work together so in the next election cycle you bring together the Ralph Naders, the Jesse Venturas, all together.
Let me state this quickly, Gary, and I got to run, which I have another interview, but they're opening the door for me. This last midterm election, what was it, 36% voter turnout?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means I got a pot of 64, the majority, to deal with. All I would have to do is run for president and go and get that 64% motivated and activated like I did in Minnesota, but the pot was only 50% in Minnesota because we generally lead the nation in voter turnout with a pathetic 50%. But that shows me 64% potential customers, 64%, plus the ones I would steal from their own 36%. So the door is wide open. All you need is ballot access and be allowed in the debates. Getting that will be the mountain to climb.
Let us continue our conversation. We look forward to coalition building and getting all the progressives and independents together and start to realize it's our country as well, not just the fascists running.
Yeah, absolutely, Gary. Thank you for having me again, and you keep up the good work. We need your voice out there.
Thank you. Governor Jesse Ventura, my guest, and we're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. Oh, just one quick announcement. For those of you who love cooking, my new cookbook, I'm submitting all the recipes. I have over 300. And the other day, I was at the health food store, and I was giving samples out to get people's feedback, about 15 people I wanted to sample. And one of the people say, gee whiz, you know, I'd like to know how to make this. And then it occurred to me, because my daughter Shelley's there, and she's one of the six chefs we have. So I said, Shelley, how would you like to have some people come in and try some dishes and see if they can make them? And she said, fine. So starting this Saturday, for Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, from 4 in the afternoon till the evening, we're going to allow 5 people at a time to each try making 2 different dishes of the new recipes for the new cookbook. Vegan and gluten-free, of course, most of it raw. If you'd like to do that, just give a call at 646-926-5422. Now, mind you, you're not coming so Shelley can make you a dish. You're coming so you can make a dish under her supervision. Because I do this, I normally send recipes out in the mail, but this year I don't have time. I'm on a deadline to get these recipes in. So if you want to try some great dishes, you could probably make 4 or 5. And that way you get the recipes. You can take them home with you and you get to sample them. And you'll be doing it under my daughter's supervision from 4 o'clock until evening, any day. That's Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Call 646-926-5422. In studio, Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here that I want to read to you.
All right.
Because you don't know that people do this, but they do it at home. This is from Barbara from Savannah, Georgia. She says, I'm a retired teacher and a voracious reader and a baby boomer. She said, 5 years ago on your program, you mentioned that you try to impart at least 10 new things per program. And I never thought of it. She says, just as a point of interest, I started making notes about each new thing that I learned. I mean, I learned about issues that I had an understanding of, but you gave us a different perspective. As of yesterday, I collected, you ready for this? 26 items of interest from each program, information that I really didn't know about. For the last 4 weeks, I've been listening to other programs, not necessarily your network, like MSNBC, Fox, PBS, NPR. And I realize that there's nothing that's really empowering or new that I learned. See, one of the benefits of being retired is that I have the time to do research projects like this. But I thought that was interesting.
It's relatively simple. All the others follow a stream. So if you listen to MSNBC or NPR or PBS or the networks or cable or Fox, they they start, like, now it's going to be Ferguson all day, every day. And I'm not going to do anything with Ferguson. They're doing all of it. And besides, that's not where the big change is going to come in America. It won't come because of racial issues, because we have too many racists in the United States and too many people who are sanctified in their self-righteous behavior that somehow if something happens to a black, they're deserving of it. It'll come because of class. And the biggest class that are disempowered in the United States are poor working people, and they're armed. And when those white poor working people, when they get shot, when they get their houses taken away from them, that's where the flash will happen. So let everyone else handle this, thinking somehow there's going to be a change. Nothing's going to change because of Ferguson. Nothing. And every day I post how African Americans or Latinos are beaten, killed by cops who got away with it. So it's every day they're getting away with it, not just in this case. Every day. And that's one of the reasons I put it up on my website, to show people Ferguson is every day of the year, for every year, for decades, and every decade. So it's nothing new. But I always put at least 30 different new pieces of information into every show, because then something is going to empower someone from listening. And that's what we want.
Okay.
Thank you. Utrece Lead on right now. Hi, Utrece.
Hi, Gary. Today we're talking about, of course, Ferguson. The grand jury's decision is not the final word.
I hope not. Well, Amy Goodman was out there today doing a live broadcast. I thought that was the final word. She wanted you with her.
I know.
Right back with Utrece Lead.